Thanks, Paxton. And thank the organizers for inviting me to this meeting. It's kind of nice. You've already seen this slide. Of course, drought is a serious problem. It's getting worse. Global warming is going to make it even worse. Drought is a big problem in cotton. A lot of cotton is grown in areas where it has to be irrigated, or the majority of it has to be irrigated, and it has serious negative effects on yield and on quality. One of the biggest problems in cotton production is the Ogallala Aquifer, which is being depleted. Here it shows some of the regions, see if I can get the mouse to work, there we go, down around Lubbock where there's heavy depletions of the Ogallala Aquifer, and it won't be too long before it just won't be possible to pump enough water to grow as much cotton as we want. So drought stress leads to a lot of different responses in plants. These are physiological, biochemical, and molecular responses. And we had dealt with some of these over the years, looking for the magic pill, looking for the magic gene that would make plants stress tolerant and not hamper yields. Over the years, we tried antioxidants, dehydrants, osmotic regulators. Other friends at Tech did proton pumps, and we were actually going to have a talk about that, but I guess it's not going to happen. And more recently, we've focused on the regulatory factors that control those protective genes. So instead of the protective genes themselves, the transcription factors and protein kinases and ubiquitin ligases that control the expression of those genes at the transcriptional and post-transcriptional levels. So about 10 years ago, we decided there was enough work in Arabidopsis at the time that we could pick a handful of interesting regulatory genes and simply put them into cotton and see what happens. We're not very creative, but you know, we at least keep working hard. So we chose some of the ABF family of genes. These are ABA-responsive transcription factors that are involved in regulation of ABA-responsive genes. We chose one. At the time, these genes were available in Arabidopsis, from Arabidopsis, not from cotton. I'll tell you a little bit about the cotton genes in a little while. But one of these genes, ABF3, had very good results in Arabidopsis, the standard model plant, lettuce, and rice. And what you'll notice is most of these papers and most of what people do is put the gene in, stop watering the plants, see what happens, see if it dies or if it recovers. And, you know, you kind of have to do that stuff to get started, and our hope is to kind of push the physiology with Paxton's help. So we introduced the Arabidopsis ABF3 gene into cotton under control of a constitutive promoter, 35S promoter. Immediately in the second generation plants, we saw some secondary effects, some effects on growth of the plant. So this shows Coker 312 plants, which is the host. These are some null segregants from some of these transgenic lines. And then some of these expressing lines. Here's four different expressing lines. They all show sort of the same thing. They grow a little bit slower. The leaves tend to curl down. The leaves are really glossy. It's because they have less wax, actually, not more wax, surprisingly. In general, the stomata are more closed, and the tap roots of the seedlings grow a little bit faster, just some of the phenotypes we looked at. The main physiological trait of these plants, these are constitutive ABF3 overexpressing plants, is that they close their stomata. So they have reduced photosynthetic rates, reduced stomatal conductance, reduced transpiration. If you pick some of those leaves off the plants and equilibrate them, so here's a wild-type plant. This is actually a wild-type and, again, a null. They lose water at about the same rate. So these are detached leaves just left on a bench and allowed to dry out. If you take some of these ABF, here's three different ABFs. The red line is the ABF. The blue line is just the same check over here. So you can see they just lose water more slowly. So they close their stomata, and they just don't lose much water. If you look at them as they dry, take pictures from day to day, this is kind of a busy slide because all of these on this side are well watered. But you can, again, you can see a little bit of the difference in the general size of the plants. They tend to be a little bit shorter, slower growing. So this is after 6 days after we just simply stopped watering them. You can see that these are wild types. These are nulls, but the rest of them are transgenic ABF overexpressing lines. How many? Four different lines in this case. And you can see they have very delayed wilting. So even after 6, 8, 9 days, they're still turgid. They still got water to burn. But the reason is because they just don't use it. The water is still in the soil. This shows the depletion of water from the wild type plants, Coker 312, over the first 5 days. You can see it's basically out of water by the fifth day. And this is the ABF3 plant. So the ABF3 plant just uses far less water. This is actually the water loss, the amount of water lost per day. So a well-watered ABF3 plant burns through about 70 grams, 70 milliliters of water a day. That plant's those size. Once you cut the water off, that goes down pretty rapidly as they close their stomata. But you can see the transgenic plants, actually in the course of the test, the water use goes up a little bit because the plant is growing a little bit. It's got a little bit more leaf area. The other interesting thing with these plants in the growth, in the greenhouse and in the growth chamber, they had much delayed flowering. So flowering was double the normal time. It took, where if it took, 90 days or 80 days, it would take 180 days for these plants. Fortunately, when we grew these plants in the field, that trait largely disappeared. The slower growth largely disappeared. And in fact, under good condition, under dry land conditions, this is, I can't remember the, I think I've got it on the next slide anyway, very low irrigation, the ABF3 plants actually grow a little bit better than Coker 312 for some lines, depends on the line. Whoops, am I going the wrong way? Yes. Okay, so these are some yield data from that field. And you can see some asterisks here that means significant differences. However, the trend is that ABF3 plants yield less under fully irrigated conditions and slightly more under dryland conditions. This makes a little bit of sense. They're a little bit less sensitive to drought. Their stomata are closed. They're saving water. That water will last a little bit longer. In some cases, they'll yield a little bit more. It's not very much, and you pay for it on the well-watered end. Okay. So if you're, if you've got an irrigated crop, you're probably not interested in ABF3 expressing cotton. If you're purely dry land, you may be down in this area anyway, and it could do some good, but it's not very much. Okay, so constitutive expression of ABF3 in cotton strongly affects their response to drought, mostly by closing the stomata. It does other things. It changes gene expression patterns. There's a lot of protective genes that are induced, but the primary physiological response is it shuts down photosynthesis. There's delayed development and late flowering in the greenhouse. That largely goes away. I think there's a 1 or 2 day delay in flowering in the field, but not very much. So can we make it better? Can it be domesticated? Is it too strong? Can we use different promoters? So if we use a different promoter, presumably if we use a stress-responsive promoter, we could express it just during stress. That might work. We've got plants like that, and they do show some stress tolerance, but the stress tolerance is less no matter when you look at them, even if you look at them dry, because you're using a weaker promoter. The other possibility is using native cotton homologs. So instead of using Arabidopsis genes, use native genes. And there's some argument for doing this. One argument is that these transcription factors aren't simply regulated transcriptionally. It's not just the amount of messenger RNA that's made or the amount of protein that's made. They're activated by phosphorylation. So it's possible that a native transcription factor could be more properly regulated in its native environment. So we've worked on that for actually for a lot of years, and we've cloned most of the cotton homologs for ABFs. Oh, this is a RD29A promoter driving ABF3 cotton. The delayed flowering and the slow growth completely eliminated, but there's not very much stress tolerance. Okay, so cotton ABF genes, there's four ABF genes and then some related genes in Arabidopsis. We found four families. Now, cotton is, of course, an allotetraploid. So for each gene, you expect to find two homeologs that are almost identical, and that's what we see. So here's, for example, ABF, we call them 7374. Those are two A genome and D. We know which are which, but they aren't marked here. A and D genome homeologs. Here's 8082, 8688. These are, you can see they're homeologous pairs, and they're all grouped in one group. And then 101, 102 down here is more closely related to Arabidopsis ABF2. And again, it's a homeologous pair. So these are differentially expressed. The 101, 102 genes are actually the most strongly induced in response to drought stress. So here's hours since watering. Oh, that arrow keeps disappearing. There it is. So you can see by 52 hours, it's pretty strong. It's coming on. But the other ones, except for this 8082, are generally not responsive to drought stress. And this is typical of transcription factors in big families like this. Often there'll be one group that strongly responds to some abiotic stress, and the others actually are activated by that. The same is true in heat shock transcription factors, where there's one or two heat shock genes that are heat responsive. They then activate the other heat shock factor genes. So this is kind of expected. So take another step away from transcription factors down the gene expression regulatory chain to a ubiquitin ligase, or at least something we think is a ubiquitin ligase. This protein is called SAP5. We found SAP5 simply by looking at genes that are ABA responsive and stress responsive. So it turns out it's one of these zinc finger proteins. It's got two zinc finger domains. In the red here, you can see the conserved cysteine and histidine domains of what's called an A20 domain. And in the yellow, it's kind of spaced out because this one's really long, but in the yellow, the conserved domains of an AN1 domain. It's expressed strongly in response to chilling, but especially ABA and osmotic stress, and it's expressed in response to dehydration. If you put that gene overexpressed in Arabidopsis, so it's an Arabidopsis gene, you get pretty solid dehydration response. So these are wild-type plants on the left. These were left for 18 days, almost completely dried out, then rewatered, and you know, we have dead plants and we have live plants. So it's good to have dead plants and live plants, especially when you're working in the laboratory. Nobody too much cares about yield from Arabidopsis. So this is a ubiquitin ligase. So ubiquitin ligases, as I'm sure you all know, are involved in regulation of the stability of other proteins, generally the stability of transcription factors, for example. This one has ubiquitin ligase activity. That's what this smear means, that it's adding, you know, those 8 kD ubiquitin proteins onto other target proteins. It's located in the nucleus. Now, what's important with a ubiquitin ligase is not that it's a ubiquitin ligase, it's what it actually ubiquinates, what it attaches these ubiquitins to. And through a process called yeast 2 hybrid screening, we identified an interesting protein that's a partner of this SAP5. And it's called, well, it has two names. It's called, the one that actually interacts is MBP1. And MBP1 stands for MYC binding protein 1. And it's an alternative translation product of an enolase gene. This enolase is involved in the glycolytic pathway and glycolysis. So this gene, if translation starts at, At 1 here, if I can get the arrow to come, at 1, you get an enolase that's involved in, again, involved in glycolysis. Your translation starts here at 93. There's another AUG, another start codon at 93. Then you get a truncated version in the same reading frame. It's the same amino acids, but it's a truncated version. That one is a transcription factor. It's this MYC binding protein. The exact same system exists in humans, and it's involved in regulating the MYC oncogene. So that's why it's called MYC binding protein. So it binds. This just shows that it binds in vitro as well as in yeast. Just to show that that short truncated protein is actually expressed, so we can express the wild-type protein, the wild-type coding sequence with the first start codon and the second start codon, then a truncated version that just has the second start codon, so it can only make MBP, and then one with a mutated second stop codon, so it can only make enolase. The enolase is actually an enolase. It has activity. We can measure. And here's the expression. So if you express the intact, you get these two bands. The top one is enolase. The bottom one is MBP. If you express just the MBP, you get just MBP. And it's much, much weaker. You can see there's not very much protein there. The reason it's very unstable, it turns over very rapidly. Okay? And if you do enolase. So if you overexpress MBP in plants, you get very short, highly branched, but very short truncated plants that just don't grow very tall. They're fertile, and they grow they're healthy, but they're short. So you can see those there. So we can show that protein is very unstable using these kinds of pulse chase experiments. So here we treat with cyclohexamide, which stops translation, and then you do a Western blot, and you can measure how much protein, how it disappears over time. So this is the upper one here is the enolase. You can see it's stable. It actually accumulates. This is the MBP, and you can see there's quite a bit at zero time, but then it rapidly disappears. Okay, it's actually ubiquinated in vivo. We can show that. So the way this works, or the way we think it works, is that LOS2, the gene, encodes two proteins, enolase, which is important for glycolysis, MBP1, which is important for signal transduction. SAP5 ubiquinates MBP1 or is involved in the ubiquination of MBP1. And I have to say it that way because we've never been able to show actual in vitro ubiquination of MBP1 by SAP5. But it does affect its stability. So either it's ubiquinating it directly or it's ubiquinating something else that's targeting it. Okay? MBP1 actually inhibits the transcription of another transcription factor called STZZAT10, and STZZAT10 is involved in regulating ABA responses. So it's a long sort of complicated protein stability regulatory mechanism to regulate ABA responses in a more subtle way than just simply putting in a transcription factor. Okay, proof of, or at least plant proof of that is if you co-express MBP1, which I showed you makes these dwarf plants, if you co-express MBP1 with SAP5, then you rescue the plant. So these are some of those rescued plants. So they're MBP1 overexpressors, but then they're also overexpressing SAP5, which breaks down, destabilizes that MBP. Okay, that was a long story. Of course, we put this gene into cotton. We'd like to know what happens. We get the same dead plant, live plant assay works perfectly. You can see the wild-type plants here and a couple of these A20 expressing lines here. If you let them desiccate, they do show delayed wilting, but they show almost no difference, there's almost no difference in transpiration rates or conductivity, and there's almost no difference in water loss. So this is the water loss. Remember, with ABF, the water loss was much, much slower with those ABF overexpressors. They do so show some differences in the field. We kind of got lucky on this one, and it rained a couple of days before we took the picture, These are dry land, but they got a little bit of rain just before the picture was taken. And you can see that the, we called it A20 back then, but it, the SAP 5 plants are bigger, they're greener, but they don't yield anymore. So they're more vigorous, the plants look better, they're more, what's the word I'm looking for, Paxton? They're more juvenile, okay? There's more vegetative growth, but it doesn't lead to any increase in yield so far that we've been able to detect. Oops, wrong way. Okay, so SAP5, we know it regulates stress responses in Arabidopsis. An interesting side note, if we express it in alfalfa and then give that alfalfa a little bit of extra light, it turns purple. It regulates the anthocyanin biosynthesis, and it's pretty cool. It's a nuclear ubiquitin ligase. It regulates the stability of MBP1, probably by ubiquinating it, but that's still a little bit up in the air. And it's involved in crosstalk between ABA-dependent and ABA-independent pathways, and that's what that STZ-STAT10 does. Overexpression, plants are viable and fertile. They show increased stress tolerance in the laboratory. There's a slight change in water loss, but not very much. So the whatever protection is there is due to mechanisms different than ABF. But at least our preliminary field testing shows there's no increase in yield. This is our new building in Ardmore. Some of you may know I moved to Ardmore from Texas Tech after 20 long years in Lubbock. And they built this building for me. Well, not just me, for us. And so we moved in. We had a OSU football watch party Saturday night and had a bunch of alumni in, and it was all kinds of fun. Some of our collaborators, researchers involved in this, Myeong Kang, I showed her picture a little bit earlier, Juhan Lee, Tyson Kerr has been cloning the cotton ABF genes. Dakota Cryer is an undergraduate, and Haji is my transformation expert. Mohammed Fulkar is my lab manager and works a lot in our lab. Scott Holliday and Paxson are both close collaborators back in Texas. And we've had funding from Cotton Incorporated, thanks. Ogallala Aquifer Initiative, Encore Seed Company, and Indian Seed Company. And I think that's it for these projects. Be happy to answer questions if we have time. Thank you.